SafetyFM.com with Jay Allen. Changing safety cultures, one broadcast and one podcast at a time.
Well, hello and welcome to another episode of Safety FM with Jay Allen. I hope everything is good and grand inside of your neck of the woods, because believe me, that's a super important aspect of the whole thing. So here's the thing. Today's going to be an interesting one because it's almost a conversation with a twist. And let me explain what I mean there. So we're still going back to the Global Innovation Safety Conference. Hold on. Is that how it's titled? It's Global Safety Innovation Summit. That's what it is. That happened back in Wollongong in Australia back in the month of February of 2024. But we're going to go back for a moment because I want you to take a listen to this conversation that's going to take place. And I shouldn't say really conversation because it's a presentation. It's a presentation that's held by Martha Acosta, Andrea Baker, and Zoe Nations. Now, it's a twist for a reason here. At the end of this little presentation, I don't get to talk to them, and I'll explain the reason why. A few weeks ago, Todd Conklin released an episode on the Pre-Accident Investigation podcast where he had done an interview with them directly after their presentation. So I didn't think that we should double up the effort. So here's what I'm going to recommend. Take a listen to the presentation between Martha Acosta, Andrea Baker, and Zoe Nations. Once you are done with this episode, jump over to the pre-accident investigation and take a listen to what Todd discussed with them. If you're not sure how to get there, you can go to safetyfm.com, click on the section that says pre-accident investigation, because Todd Conklin is also on our network. So with that being said, without any further ado, let's not wait any longer and take a listen to the presentation between Martha Acosta, Andrea Baker, and Zoe Nations right now on The Jay Allen Show. Or should I say Safety FM with Jay Allen? Oh, there's so many shows. Who can keep up? Take a listen right now here on Safety FM.
We are going to attempt in half an hour. I'm probably setting ourselves up to fail. But we're going to attempt to start the conversation a bit around accountability in practice. Okay, so how do we start actually applying this? What does it mean for us day to day? So to do that, I just want to kind of ground ourselves as an audience. So I'm going to ask you a question. So if you pull out your mobile phones, please. And you should have you can use this barcode to go to the Slido question. So the idea is that we want to ask, okay, so what does good look like? The reason I want to understand this is when you think about a good workplace, good culture, what are the words that you would use to describe what that looks and feels like? You can use more than one. And so this is important because this is what we're aiming for, okay? We want to see if we're on the same page on this. So put in your words.
Can I do the noise?
Yeah, this is where we do our dance. Mm-hmm. And so you guys know how this works. If there's more than one word, they'll be bigger, that kind of thing. So I ask this question a lot. It's pretty similar. Okay. So what you're starting to see, keep answering, and we'll save that because I think it's really good. Like, this is our vision, right? This is what we want. This is what we're working for. This is the point. And so it's really important to have this discussion because what you'll see in there aren't really any... Are there any words in there, guys? No, that we were talking about? No. There's no words saying command and control or don't speak up or just get on with it.
Fearful.
No, love that word. That yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're not seeing those words. You're seeing these words, which Martha will talk a little bit about. What does this mean for your leadership? This is great, but if we go back to the slides... So this is all great. This is what we want. But have a look now, and these are some of the common challenges that we tend to have. These look familiar? Right? And these are only a sample, but these are the ones that when we were sitting down together and we're like, okay, so when we talk about accountability, what comes up every time? These are like definitely in there.
Are we missing any? Yell yeah. out if we're missing one up here that you hear all the time.
The jail one, the get out of jail.
Yeah. What did you say? Can't have the prisoner. Yeah, we've heard that. Can't have the prisoners running the jail. Yeah, we have heard that. How do you measure? Oh, you hear that a lot? Yeah, how do you measure?
It's going big, it's going big.
All right. What's the alternative to punishment? What's the alternative? Oh, yes, that is one. What is the alternative to punishment? That's a good one. So there's this tension between what we think good looks like and what we see up on the screen. And in the small amount of time that we have together, we're hoping that we can relieve some of that tension. We'll find out. You can tell us if we were successful or not. So Martha, you want to talk to us about like the leadership view of this big word that we call accountability?
The leadership word that we talk. So Todd started off by talking about the importance of leadership. Does anybody have a good definition of what leadership is that you've used? I mean, what is leadership?
Influence.
Okay. What else? Yeah.
Role modeling, inspiring.
Role modeling, inspiring, all of these sorts of things. How do you actually do that? Do you wake up in the morning and say, I'm going to be influential, I'm going to be inspiring? It makes it sound like it's all about charisma and not something particularly practical. So how do we get to the outcomes that we're supposed to be moving towards in an organization that makes us successful through leadership? How many people think it's hiring the right people? Hire the right people? No, a few people are there. I hear that a lot. A good supervision? Anybody for good supervision, right? No. So you're already becoming pretty well indoctrinated in everything that we've been talking about. I would say that leadership is an empathetic practice. And by that, I just want to go a little bit deeper because we've used the word empathy a few times to say what empathy is. Empathy has three components, according to Daniel Goleman. There is cognitive kind of empathy, where you understand somebody else's point of view. And certainly that's been talked about by several people, by Bob, by others, sort of seeing the perspective of the worker. There is empathy with respect to understanding how other people feel. And this is the one that everyone gets mixed up on when they say, can I be too empathetic? Because they're confusing it with sympathy. And then there's the final one, which is understanding what people need. Those three things are how you actually create accountability. And it does not mean, empathy does not mean that you're necessarily agreeing with how they see things, agreeing with how they feel, or agreeing with what they think that they need, which means that you have to have an ongoing relationship and conversation. Now, everybody, after I've worked with an organization, all the leaders always say, you know what, I guess that means that we really have to have more one-on-ones. I really have to get out there in the field and talk to people and you know, and engage with them more. How many people, tell me the honest truth, how many people feel, just like was said earlier around coaching, that if you spent all your time as a leader talking to people, that you wouldn't feel, that you wouldn't be judged as not actually working, right? So how many people, you feel, you know that in order to create accountability, right, you have to have these ongoing conversations, and yet leaders don't feel like they can lead because they're trapped in HR systems, management systems, all of these things that create accountability by creating some kind of a trail. How many of you have metrics on how many one-on-ones or how many leadership by walking around elements that you have done? So we really have to change our view of how we engage in empathy as a practice. Yeah. And I'm going to let you guys jump in an example.
So we'll talk you through a story, okay? Because we have to have this conversation on a macro level, but you're like, okay, well, how does this work? And what tends to happen is we talk about accountability in a huge space, but let's just walk it through and see what it looks like in reality.
Especially, I think it's important to go from a place where, you know, we know what we're trying to achieve, and yet when you look at the reality of what your organization might look like today, it feels very different from that. So, I mean, at least in our world, you could see the day-to-day and think, man, I mean, that sounds utopian and lovely to view accountability this way, but, you know, we're barely talking to each other, so how can we...
Yeah.
I mean, how do we get from here to there? So your story is lovely because it's like the first step, you know, just like a bit of how you get there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah.
So, okay, so this is one story where we have Alan and Keith working on a site. They're production technicians. They're on the night shift. And they have been setting up isolations, okay? So they've been doing electrical isolations for maintenance work the next day, okay? The next day, the shift comes in, the day shift comes in, and they catch that they've done the isolation incorrectly, okay? So there's a bunch of stuff missing. And so that's the word that we were using, okay? Well, we've caught these guys, they've done something wrong. And it's pretty obvious, because it's pretty obvious that they know the procedure and they've chosen not to follow it, right? It's what we call a violation, okay? An intentional rule break. You need a rule, intentionally broke it. I could use the just culture chart that we had at the time. We've thrown that out now, so I can't use that. So, amen. So what we do is, we've got a bit of frustration going on because this is not the first isolation incident. In fact, this is one of our biggest problems on this site. So our GM is going, oh, normally we'd be standing down, we'd be talking file notes. In fact, the supervisor's poised, ready, going, file note, we're doing this? And he says, you know, I'm pretty frustrated, so like, well, why don't we do some of that stuff we've been talking about? What was that? What was this five principles, some of that hop stuff? Whatever you want to call it. This is where we can maybe try this. So we decide to invite the poor guys into the investigation. So at the time, we were just planning to do a 5Y investigation. So we said, okay, well, why don't we just ask them to come in and have a conversation? And so they come into the room. When, you know, they come in, they're super pumped. No, they're not. They come in and they're like, they come in and they're just like, you know, you can see their body language. They're coming in and they're like, hey, we know why we're here. And they sit down and there's a few of us around. There's the investigation team. Their supervisor's not there. We did some pre-thinking about this beforehand. And so they say, look, we know why we're here because we messed up. They use stronger language with that. We messed up, okay? And so this is on us. We both, like, they're looking at each other going, we know what we did. We chose not to follow it. We know the procedure and we breached it. So we've got what's coming. Like, we know the deal, okay? So can we just kind of not go through this painful process? And the GM was sitting in the meeting at that time. And he sort of said, look, I understand that, but we keep seeing this happening. Is this the first time that you've done this? And they're like, you know, right, do I tell the truth or and implicate myself even further? I've got a choice right now. And so the GM starts talking and says, look, I've got a bigger problem here. This is going on. I don't think you're the only ones that are doing this. I'm not asking you to dob in your mates, because they start going, no, we didn't say anything. Right, there's all this kind of tension in the room, and he says, and releases the tension by saying, I just feel we've got a bigger problem, I really would like you to help us fix it, okay? So will you do that? I'm going to leave you with the team, and I just want you to talk through what you're doing and just see where you go. And I have no intention of putting a file note against you. I want to know what we need to do different as an organization, okay? So there's this tiny, maybe empathy there already, setting up, they're feeling it. So he leaves the room and we have a conversation with them and we walk through the job. Not the actual event, but the job. And so we learn a bunch of stuff. We don't just learn about this breach in the isolation procedure. They start sharing all these other breaches, like they're printing out the isolation certificate and they're saving it on their hard drive, pre-populated, because it's just really quick. They can just do it without having to do a bespoke design, which they're supposed to do every time, because they start explaining the procedure's really like long, and we've had a huge increase in the number of isolations we're having to do, and so we've got this really quick way we've done it, and we know we're not supposed to do it. So they're telling us other stuff because they've been given some permission to. And then they talk through some of the details of why they breached the isolation, and they talk us through that shift. And they say, oh, and we, so during the shift, we noticed some issues with the paperwork. So we raised it with our supervisor and he said, look, we need to get this isolated before the start of the day shift or they're going to be behind. So I can live with that paperwork. Just leave it and get on with what you need to do. And they're kind of going, well, I feel like we were trying to stop the job, but we've kind of been shut down. All right, fine. It's obvious where our priorities should be. Let's just get on with it. And so they keep working through. And of course, now we're like, probably need to speak to the supervisor. because now if I wanted to, I can start pointing my finger to the supervisor. And goes, supervisory issue. So we bring in the supervisor to have a chat with him, and we start learning that the pressures that he was under is that he is being on a performance management review and held against his other shifts. And his shift is one of the ones that's the slowest with the isolations. So he's been told explicitly to pick up his game, right? Your shift are constantly making mistakes in this space. You need to pick it up. So there's some context for him and a bunch more stuff that I won't go into. So at the end of the, I guess, as we get towards this, we discover all this good stuff. We start solving it. So what are we going to do? How are we going to fix this? So we came up with some ideas. The guys came up with the ideas around, well, some of the isolation certification actually can be pre-populated. And this is why. And we looked at the risk. We walked through that. And then we walked through other ideas around the procedure and why it had been so, had so much complexity added into it. Because this was an ongoing problem, so we'd added more control. We thought we were doing the right thing, but of course we were making it way more complex for them. So we kind of looked at like an idea, some of their ideas, just to kick off where could we remove some of this clutter. Just a start of the conversation. So we brought the GM back in, and this is where we give him a bit of feedback around where do we end up. Doesn't want to see the 5 why, just wants to listen to the guys and their conversation. This is the first time they've spoken to him face-to-face, right? They've been in town halls like this, but never face-to-face. So they have a conversation, he's listening, and he's going, okay, this is really helpful. I've got some stuff I can work with on here. And the guys are telling him, in front of, looking him in the eye and saying, oh, we breached this, and then we didn't follow this. They're not laughing and going, ha-ha, we got away with it. They're telling him honestly, and then they're coming up with ideas. And then at the very end, as we're kind of wrapping up and unpacking away our stuff, I see them go over to the GM and they just go and say, look, I'm really sorry about this. We feel terrible. I'm really, from the bottom of my heart, I'm sorry that we've breached this. You know, but thank you for letting us be part of this, because this is not how we thought this was going to go. And the GM says, well, no, I want to thank you because you gave us a lot of stuff. And they shake hands. And so the restorative part of this is what happens next is those guys go back into work. Alan and Keith go back to work. And they're like, what happened to you then? Where's the file note? And they start going, well, actually, that's not how it went down. So that stuff we've been trying to get through about the isolation certification, I think we're going to be allowed to do some of it. And he listened. So it's one data point. It's two people in a huge organization. But it's one more data point that's clawing us closer to that list that we're trying to aim for, one data point at a time. So that's kind of that restorative justice, if you walk it through in one example.
Yeah. And if we're thinking about practically what accountability can look like the type of accountability that we all want to have, that's a really good mental picture of what it does look like. And maybe it's naive to use, but I mean, I tend to use just the dictionary definition of accountability, the Merriam-Webster specifically dictionary definition
nice,
of it.
Pull it out.
And it's somebody's willingness to take responsibility for their actions and to account for, to tell the story of their actions. And if we picture a group of people working together in which that's how we tend to interact, right? We're willing to take responsibility and to talk about, yeah, I made this decision and I'll walk you through why I made it. That sounds like a fairly lovely place to work. But then we very quickly tend to confuse this notion of accountability with disciplinary action or HR disciplinary action. And I think it's because historically we maybe thought that the way that you get accountability is through disciplinary action, but they're very different concepts. We need disciplinary action, and I think that maybe that's where some of us, have been very uncomfortable with the concepts when we first learn about this space. I don't know if anyone else had this feeling, but I kind of felt like people were preaching anarchy the first time that I heard some of the HOP concepts. Because, it came from a highly regulated environment, and there were rules that were put in place that were supposed to save people's lives. And it just, I just kept hearing people breaching those rules and us saying, well, we're going to learn from it. And my first thought is, well, where is the accountability? But the definition that I was using was a confusion of accountability and disciplinary action. Now, what's interesting is somebody's willingness to take responsibility for their actions, a big piece of whether or not somebody can do that and is willing to do it, has to do with how we've set up our organization, right? The way that we're interacting with each other, whether or not we've given somebody the ability to actually not fall on the sword, not say, oh, woe is me, and but to actually talk through the logic of why it was making sense to take those actions. But I think it's probably important for us to recognize that HR disciplinary action is needed, but we use it when we have a person problem. And one of the things that really helped me understand, like, the real practical, like, the nuts and bolts of how to use this day to day was being able to separate out how, at least personally, I was defining a person problem from a system problem. So person problems, it does make sense to use some sort of, and when I say HR disciplinary action, just to be clear, I'm, you know, talking about progressive discipline. If you have a coaching conversation, right, and you have some sort of discussion there to try to understand some of the problems, and then, you know, if you see this continues to persist, right, then you have a written documentation or an oral warning or a written, you guys all have your own policies, I'm sure, that you follow, right? So when we're looking for that space of where to use it, it's a person problem, not a system problem. And sometimes they seem very confusing as to which is which. But person problems, they follow the person around. Like, truly, person problems, they're hiring mistakes. Right? They're, all of us we're subject to context, right? We're subject to the world that we live in and how we were raised. But there's some context that we are in direct control over and as an organization. And there's some context that people come in with. And sometimes what people are coming in with is not meeting the social norms of our organization. We're talking about things like bullying, like harassment. Like it's the person, if you have a field team, nobody wants to work with that person because they actually don't listen to anyone else around them. And people are physically uncomfortable being around this person. And the really nice thing about person problems is that you already know who they are. Like, you do. Like, by first and last name, and most of them have nicknames, and they're not nice. And some of the things I think that we've struggled with, all of us, is the fact that sometimes our HR policies make it very hard for us to deal with person problems, right? So we end up just moving them around from group to group. So I've had my time with this person, and now it's your turn, and I'm very sorry, right? But it's not that we're surprised that they exist. You could list them. I mean, just out of curiosity, I've never actually asked this question with people raising their hands, but if I gave you a piece of paper, could you actually list out your person problems right now? Okay.
Yeah.
So, and if you can't, then sometimes you can do it with the folks that you work with, right? So sometimes you actually, it might mean that we're not close enough to the work to even know the person problems that are existing with folks that are actually touching things and turning things. And so we absolutely need disciplinary. It gives someone a fair chance to change, right? So we set the expectation, gives them a fair chance to change before we ask them to leave. Because in these circumstances, truly, it is addition through subtraction, right? It really is. It's the person that when they finally do leave, for whatever reason, the response that we have is, it's about time. That's our person problem. But what's really important about this, and I think Todd talks to this a lot, is that person problems don't just pop up when you have an event, right? So if an event happens on a Tuesday, if the person wasn't a person problem on Monday, they didn't just become one. And so actually, when we have something go wrong, this is probably the last time that we want to talk about HR disciplinary action. We have many opportunities to be performance managing. And honestly, I've gotten to a place where, honestly, it feels shame on me if I've had to wait for an event in order to deal with a person problem I already knew about. And so then there's a lot of work in many cases that has to go into reforming how we write our policies, what our HR policies look like. But there are folks in the HR space and in the legal space that are more than willing to try to figure out how do we do this differently. And there are companies that are going in this direction. System problems, that's where we're learning and improving, right? That's when Todd brought up the fact that we've got error and we've got this sort of gray space in between and with that box around it. I don't know if you remember. That's the place where learning and improving is important, because system problems, it's not, you could have many people interacting with that system. It follows the system around. Person problems, if you remove the person, the problem goes away, and it's lovely. It 100% goes away if the person's gone. System problems, you could remove a person, and you're going to see that same behavior that you don't like pop up again. You're going to see it over and over again. And that's a really clear indication that it isn't a function of the human that's there. It's a function of the environment that we've put the human in. And so actually just this separation, if you could throw the slide up, right, just being able to separate these concepts out, and I mean, this is probably not a perfect definition by any means, but it's the way that my brain separates these things out. We do have person problems. That's a very small percentage. And if we can get good at least asking ourselves this question, are we dealing with a person problem or a system problem, we actually can get pretty far in a discussion about what we should be doing next. And I know this just from a tiny case study. And the case study is the fact that my poor husband, who's a plant manager, has to hear me talk about these things all the time. And it's affected the way, so he's got, it's a fairly small site, about 800 people that work at this site. But he actually, in his fairness, do you guys have like meetings about like fairness and whether or not you're going to administer disciplinary action? You have those, you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, they do.
Yes, they do. Well, in that meeting, one of the things that he just talks about on the surface is when an incident comes up, whether this is a quality issue or a safety issue, whatever the outcome is, right, whatever the part of the process we ended up touching, he just asks people, hey, help me understand if this is a person problem or a system problem. And then he asks a lot of questions to figure out which one we're dealing with. Tells me it works. Yeah. I don't know, but I'm also his wife, so. So you try it out and let it know. Let us know if it works. But Martha, anything we're missing here?
Well, I mean, I think one of the things to actually pay attention to is that leadership is an important organizational system as well. And so, as we've been talking about it, I think everybody needs to spend some time reflecting on their own leadership and how they're creating an opportunity for your influence, we use the word influence, to continue beyond your presence. And so, this, you know, you think about the example that Zoe gave with that GM in that very simple interaction of accepting an apology. Just accepting an apology, and how that could have an enormous influence beyond his presence on the rest of the organization, where the organization can say, maybe things have changed here. Maybe I can believe the messages, the posters on the wall about our values. Maybe there is actually a chance that someone cares what I think, that my feelings are something that I can talk about and work through, and that being able to express my needs and also be in a conversation with my leader so that I can really figure out how my needs are going to be met. Because sometimes, you know, we put a lot on the worker. They don't always know what they need, and we need a conversation to figure that out together. Once they see curiosity, vulnerability, and compassion in their leadership, your organization will change so that the fear, the recrimination, the shame, the emotional reaction to blame no longer has the destructive power that it had before. We're all human beings. We will have those things will happen. But they don't have to have the destructive power of completely ruining your organization's efforts to create a safe workplace.
And I think in our story, right, because I sometimes think we give leaders a hard time too. We're like, well, but we're not blaming leaders. So this is about shared accountability. So a lot of the feedback we get is, oh, that's that thing where you don't have anyone, no one's accountable for anything. Actually, this, in our experience and in the research we're seeing more and more, is a way of enabling long-lasting, sustainable accountability. It gets you that bit closer to that list you guys gave us. And, you know, you're walking away, you're both walking away with a shared understanding of what happened. You're restoring the justice. You've got a little bit more operational learning, operational insight, and just a little bit, right? It's not like from zero to hero, but we're just kind of, this is a long-term change that we need to go through.
And which do you think is harder? I mean, which would you rather do? Would you rather cultivate your curiosity, your vulnerability, and your compassion? Or would you rather live with the pressure of having to be charismatic and always be right? What would you rather be?
Yeah, easier said than done.
Yeah, thank you.
Cool.
Thank you.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.